From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, special reports with Linda Moulton Howe, and you're going to love them. Plus, followed by conversations with Linda. That's when we take your phone calls. Here's what's happening. One of our feature stories at coasttocoastam.com. Take a look at the story of the large metallic ball that fell out of the sky in a remote grassland area in the Namibia area, prompting baffled authorities to contact NASA and the European Space Agency. The hollow ball with a circumference of about 1.1 meters was found near a small village in the northern part of that country. Locals had heard several small explosions a few days beforehand. Nobody has any idea where they are. Several such balls have dropped in southern Africa, Australia, and Latin America in the past 20 years. That's how bizarre this story is. Walmart has pulled a batch of powdered infant formula from more than 3,000 of its stores nationwide after a newborn Missouri boy was given the formula and became gravely ill with a suspected bacterial infection and died after being taken off life support. No government recall had been ordered for the 12.5-ounce cans of Infamil newborn powder with the lot number ZP1K7G. The manufacturer's Mead Johnson Nutrition, they say their records show that the lot tested negative for the bacterium before it was shipped. But Walmart spokespeople say the company decided to pull the lot out of the abundance of caution while health officials investigate the death. Very sad story there. And Johnson & Johnson, which has been plagued by product recalls in the past 2 years, said it is voluntarily asking retailers to remove about 12 million bottles of Motrin pain relievers from store shelves. The coated caplets may not dissolve as quickly as intended when they are near their expiration date. They say this is not a safety concern. Our food safety expert, Jeff Nelkin, on with us. Jeff, first of all, I want to ask you about this baby formula. They don't know for sure if that's the problem. Sad story indeed. I don't know. What can people do about stuff like this?
Well, I think the first thing is that there's a telephone number. If you think you have formula and you're not sure about the number, it's 1-800-BABY, B-A-B-Y, and 123. And then this way you can call and speak directly to the people and find out if product that you have in your house now is part of the recall. Secondly, I think they are re-emphasizing about properly following the procedures on how to make this formula, because once the formula is made, contaminated water, contaminated practices could contribute to the problem as well.
That's a good point. And the Motrin, now they say not a safety issue, but 12 million bottles, that's a lot of bottles, huh?
Oh, for sure. But again, you know, if something doesn't dissolve, it certainly, you know, can make you feel uncomfortable.
Jeff, before we lose you here, Christmas time right around the corner. Again, a little safety tip for people who are cooking their food, whether it's turkey, ham, what do they do?
Again, make sure that, you know, people wash their hands prior to handling food and work with a food thermometer and make sure that, you know, if you're dealing with turkey, that you reach 165 degrees so that you serve a safe turkey. And again, don't keep out your food longer than 2 hours.
All right, Jeff Benelkin, by the way, food safety coach.
Happy holidays.
You too, Jeff. Always a pleasure. This is an amazing story. They were getting a 21-year-old ready to donate his organs. He was in a coma. They thought he was going to be dead. They thought he was brain dead. He was a student from Arizona College. They were going to take his organs away. He miraculously recovered just hours before doctors were considering taking him off life support. It's an amazing story. The 21-year-old had brain injuries. They were so severe at the hospital, they said they could not treat him. And he just woke up following an October 19th car accident in Tucson, which took the life of his friend and a roommate. In Rhode Island, National Grid spent the night going door-to-door to shut off gas in westerly Rhode Island because the pressure is way too low. Nearly 1,600 homes are experiencing problems with their natural gas lines. Here's the twist about all this. Police officers, along with a locksmith, enter the home to shut off the valves if you're not home. Do they have the right to do that? And meanwhile, foreclosures continue to mount around this country. is former Wall Street investment banker Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, what kind of a year are we going to have in 2012?
George, it's going to be rough. It's probably going to be rougher than this year. Now, we've worked through a fair amount of the foreclosures, but the, you know, people's income are down, and a lot of savings have been worked off. We now have reports from the census that almost one in every two Americans technically is below the poverty line. So I think we've got another tough year in housing. We just saw the realtors come out and say that they had overestimated sales for the last several years by 14%, and therefore the market looks better because they've now marked down their report, you know. So, but, and this is part of the problem, because I think one of the things that has the market depressed is there's a fundamental lack of trust throughout the system. So we have a lot more to work through. And before I hang up, George, I just have to say that Christmas is a time when I give thanks, and I give so much thanks for you and your wonderful crew and the wonderful Coast to Coast audience.
Catherine, thank you. And you have a great Christmas, my dear.
You too.
Catherine Austin Fitch, one of the best, let me tell you. The Large Hadron Collider on the French-Swiss border has made its first clear observation now of a new particle since opening back in 2009. It's called the Chb3p and will help scientists understand better the forces that hold matter together. They continue to find new things. One day, maybe they'll be able to explain what all this means. A newfound comet defied long odds, surviving a dive through the sun's atmosphere. Comet Lovejoy plunged through the sun's corona, coming within 87,000 miles of our star's surface. Temperatures in the corona can reach 2 million degrees Fahrenheit. So the most researchers expected what they thought was an icy wanderer to be completely destroyed. But Lovejoy proved to be made of tough stuff. Up next, physicist James McCanny joins us. We'll talk about that and also weather predicting next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie, one of the regular contributors to Coast AM, of course, is professor and physicist James McCanny. Latest books, Atlantis to Tesla, Planet X, Principia Meteorologia, and the James McCanny Science Hour, which he's got on DVD as well. We're going to talk this hour about weather predicting and also about a comet that we thought was going to get gobbled up by the sun, but it did not. James, I bet that didn't surprise you, though, did it?
No, George. This was an amazingly big comet, and I'm looking at the video right now. 21 NASA instruments were poised on this. They all thought it was going to basically melt or go away when it hit the sun. It came within about 100,000 miles of the sun, which is just right in the solar atmosphere, basically. And it came out the other side. And what's amazing is we saw a Pluto-sized planet coming out the other side. You could actually see the planet. That's how big it was. Jeez. And then it started forming the comet tail again. So this is exactly what I've been talking about, something big, planet-sized. And NASA said this was 600 feet across, that the nucleus was 600 feet across. It had a light dusting of snow, they said. But the comet tail filled up the cameras, the SOHO cameras and the other observing cameras. So to imagine that something the size of two football fields covered with a little dusting of snow performed, gave us this performance, went through the solar atmosphere of millions of degrees, spent hours there and came out the other side and then developed the comet tail again. And, of course, there's no comment from NASA.
Well, you know, you've been vindicated again, James. You've been saying, as you know, on this program for years, that comets are much more than icy snowballs. And here again, scientists kept thinking and saying, you know, this thing's going to melt up. It's an icy snowball. And it did not. So what does this tell us about the complexity of some of these objects in the universe?
Well, the discharge phenomena that causes a comet it's common. The Earth is doing this. Jupiter does it. The Moon does it. All of the celestial objects in the solar system are discharging the solar capacitor. NASA has satellites all over. They're observing this, but they don't know what they're observing. They talk about magnetic effects. They are seeing magnetic fields, but magnetic fields just don't exist in outer space by themselves. I'm looking at the comet video right now, and you can see this. There are many sites, but the SOHO at NASA, S-O-H-O. The comet tail, for example, is the wrong direction for something coming off the comet. The tail is the wrong direction. It's like if you looked at a smokestack and there was smoke coming out in a light breeze, and the tail, the smoke was going in the wrong direction, you'd say, something's wrong here. There's something else is going on. And then when the comet comes out of the sun, the tail doesn't develop right away. You actually see the nucleus. And to imagine this is 600 feet wide, but it shows up the size of Venus on the SOHO camera, and NASA still calls this a little icy wanderer. It's beyond absurd. These people are just in denial.
You know, James, I call you the modern-day Velikovsky, of course, and his theory was that Venus was a captured comet. The more we see some of these comets coming into our solar system, the more I'm beginning to wonder, maybe he was correct. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Velikovsky made some mistakes because he was in the 1950s. He adopted some of the standard theoretical concepts like dirty snowball and things, but his observations of historical recordings of the Venus event were very accurate. Venus was a big comet. It was stretched from one part of the sky to the other. You could see it in the daytime. The ancients all over the world were very clear about this. And so they laughed at Velikovsky. Carl Sagan made a big hit and became a movie star out of ridiculing Velikovsky. But it turns out that he was right. Velikovsky was right that comets are something different. And, of course, he didn't know. He didn't know scientifically. And so what my work does is puts the scientific background on this. These comets, for example, I'm watching the comet come into the sun here, and the sun is doing something very rare. It's pulsating. It's going whoosh, whoosh. Out the side, you can see this very rapid pulsating, and you can see the comet pulsating at the same rhythm. As the comet comes out the other side, like I said, it first didn't develop the tail right away. It was actually the nucleus, you could see, about the size of Venus. And then it starts developing the tail. Then the sun starts doing this pulsation again, dancing with the comet. You can see this amazing electrical interaction between the comet and the sun. So with the case of Venus, Earth actually passed through the comet tail on two occasions. Historically, that's what we're told. And so and all of these effects that happened at the time are very explainable. The Earth had very many effects. And then what we see is these kind of events have happened hundreds of times in Earth's history. So the demise of the dinosaurs, the great mass extinctions of Earth were not caused by like an asteroid hitting Earth. They were caused by these massive comets that come through the solar system. So one of the fundamental flaws of people that talk about Planet X is they all talk about a big round thing like a Jupiter planet that you would see in the sky. What you would see is a big comet.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's what my book, Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes, the very first book in the series, talks about, that comets and planets are very much the same. And you can see this object, Comet Lovejoy. It's a giant comet. It comes into the sun. It loops through the solar atmosphere, and it comes out a giant planet, and then it starts forming the comet tail again. It's all there.
Jim, a couple weeks ago, the heads of the National Hurricane Prediction Center basically said, we can't predict these things. You know, what's going on there?
This, George, was the most amazing. My jaw dropped about 2 feet when I read this. The heads of the Hurricane Prediction Center, which is based in, I believe, Boulder, Colorado. But for decades, these people, William Gray, and some other people
claim to predict hurricanes. And every year I said, these people don't know what they're doing. They have a laundry list of factors that have absolutely nothing to do with hurricane development, yet they're making predictions. They came out and said, in their words, that nothing they had done in the previous 20 years had any predictive value. And I was just amazed because this is something extremely rare. It would be like the equivalent of NASA coming out and saying, Jim McCaney is right, comets are not dirty snowballs, and we don't know anything. That would be the equivalent, but we don't hear that from NASA about comets. They continue on thinking. But the hurricane prediction, the two people in charge, now I want to go back a couple of years, about half of their staff quit a number of years ago.
How come?
Because of this same issue.
Well, I've always suspected, Jim, that, you know, for example, last year they said we're going to have 13 major hurricanes and six of them could be, you know, huge types. And it never happens. It just never seems to happen. We might get one or two, but what's wrong? Is it their method that they're using, their science principles? What's going on?
Well, they're using, first of all, they claim that hurricanes form because of warm water. And hurricanes have nothing at all to do with warm water. The biggest hurricanes in history were in the North Atlantic. We see hurricanes over land. We see hurricanes on Mars. We see hurricanes in very cold up in the Arctic. We see hurricanes down in the Antarctic. It has absolutely nothing to do with warm water or salt content. Then they have all kinds of factors like upper wind shear and La Nina, El Nino. None of these things have anything to do with hurricanes. Yet they put all of these together, and I appreciated one blogger's comment. He said this would be like saying Syracuse University basketball team is going to score between 60 and 90 points. Well, they always score between 60 and 90 points. That's the kind of prediction that these guys would make. And then they would have a mid-course correction about August, halfway through the hurricane season. And by the end of the hurricane season, all their statistics came out correct because they were making these adjustments as the hurricane season went on. But it would be like saying that in Las Vegas, 80% of the people are going to lose at blackjack. It's the way it is. You know, there was no predictive value. So finally, these guys came out and said this. But I'm trying to figure out exactly, did they say this on their own or did somebody prompt them to say this? Could this be a lead-in to somebody manipulating storms? And then they could fall back on this and say, well, hurricanes are not predictable. You know, we have all these hurricanes now. I don't know. I can't put my hand on exactly why they did this. But you know, George, every year I give my own hurricane prediction.
Well, you're pretty accurate, but you've been more accurate than they have been, Jim.
Well, and I do something very different. I pick dates. I pick dates on which hurricanes have a high probability of forming. Because of the same reason that comets are not dirty snowballs, the comets are electrical discharges of the solar capacitor. So what I do is I look for planetary electrical alignments and new moons and other factors that would contribute to enhancing the electrical currents that are passing by Earth. And those are the things that drive the hurricanes. Not warm water. Warm water has absolutely nothing to do with it. So, for example, in 1999 in May, I predicted that September 6th of that year would be a tremendous booming time for hurricanes. And up to the night before, there were no hurricanes at all. And at midnight on that night in September, 60 storms, tropical storms, developed around the equator, with five major hurricanes in the Atlantic. And the reason was because I could see those electrical planetary alignments coming. And just like clockwork, there they were. So I have scientific basis for what I'm doing, and I have the cause of hurricanes. Hurricanes are caused by electrical currents from the ionosphere that drive these storms through the cloud systems.
James, when we come back, we're going to talk to you about these hurricanes and also all things space. It's a moment to talk with James McCanny about science next on Coast to Coast AM. Or with Professor James McCanny. Jim, before we take calls, what are you working on these days?
Well, I'm working more on my prime number work. It's something that has fascinated me. Of course, a number of years ago, I came out with the Calculate Primes book. We released that on Coast to Coast. And I have many new developments, let me put it that way. And I think these are going to move some mathematicians in a whole new direction. It's pretty exciting work, and hopefully pretty soon I'll be able to release that to the public.
All right, great. Let's go to Don now, truck driving somewhere west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Don.
Good evening, George. Merry Christmas to you and James.
You too, Don.
And I have a question for you, George. I got a very close friend of mine. He was admitted to the hospital today. He's got some internal bleeding, which they don't know what's causing it yet. And I'd like you to put him on your prayer list, if you would, please.
Done deal.
And for James, that comet that passed through the sun, why didn't it just dissolve? I mean, why did it start filling its tail again, but in like an opposite direction?
Well, it's not. Imagine, Don, you're all familiar with a football field. The NASA said this was two football fields big and had a light dusting of snow. Now, imagine it just on an average sunny day in the springtime. How long would it last with the sun on it? Now imagine that this thing is going through the solar wind, which is blasting out of there at 100,000 miles an hour and is hot, about 6,000 degrees. It's going through the 2 million degree solar corona. It plunges through the solar atmosphere for hours and comes out the other side and then develops a comet tail again. Is this something 600 feet wide, covered with a dusting of snow? It's so beyond absurd that in what we see coming out the other side of the sun is a planet. It doesn't form the tail right away when it comes out of the sun. We literally see the planet. And I get a kick out of the NASA picture here. I'm looking at it online. It says it's the comet head. And I've never seen that expression, so they apparently were at a loss for words because, like I say, there was no tail. It was literally the nucleus, and you could see it just like you could see Venus or Mercury, one of the other planets, in the field of view of the SOHO cameras. I wanted to mention, too, this comet came in with a companion. It had a moon. And you can see it clearly if you look at the videos. It's in front of the comet coming into the sun and orbiting the comet. So this thing was big. To have something orbiting at the distance of about 40 lunar radii, in other words, 40 times the distance of the moon to Earth, this comet nucleus had a moon around it, at least one that I could see clearly. And to do that, this had to be a very massive object. So all of the data is just, it's beyond clear. This was a planet-sized object. It was not some little icy wanderer. And there's no way it could have had ice on it once it left the sun. So let's cut the bait and get fishing here, NASA. And let's admit that comets are not dirty snowballs. They just can't be.
Jim, why won't they admit it? If this is the case, why don't they simply say, whoa, this was a huge planet-size object that went through?
George, yeah, we've been through that, and I always used to think it was ego or something else, but it's something way bigger. Imagine if they said that. Okay, now all of a sudden, comets are the discharge of the solar capacitor. They're electrical. The first thing that everybody's going to think is, well, if there's that much powerful electricity out there, can't we tap into this? grab some of this and get off of oil and nuclear and coal? And the answer is yes. So they are in collusion with the energy industries. Also, we're talking about world control here. The people in control of the world, the one biggest thing they fear is that the people of Earth would find out about a little thing called Planet X, that when it comes in, it's going to look like a comet. So there's in what would, I know you've said this on the air before, what are people going to think if all of a sudden one of these major issues comes to light? They're first of all going to realize that the government's been lying to them, NASA's been lying to them, and they're going to lose all credibility. And why would you pay your next mortgage payment if you knew that this is, you know, a potential future for Earth?
Good point. Let's go to Jim, Santa Clarita, California, first-time caller. Jim, you're on. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir.
What's your thing?
Enjoy your show. For the professor, what's your take on the planet alignment that's, you know, predicted for 2012, which is supposed to be, what, an end of times scenario?
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
Well, I actually, part of what I did prior to the show is I put together my own hurricane predictions for 2012, and one of the dates I looked at specifically was the end of December, and December 21st, 2012, Earth has no alignments. It has no new moon or full moon. The other planets are scattered around the solar system, and none of them are aligned with Earth at all. But in 2012, we have three minor planetary electrical alignments. One is on March 22nd. We have Earth, Mercury, and a new moon. On April 23rd, we have the Earth, Saturn, and a new moon. And then on March 16th, we have Earth, Mercury, and a new moon. And so those are minor, what I would call minor electrical conditions that could spur a bit of local storm activity unless we have some major solar flaring or a major comet come in, which, of course, we can't predict at this time. But so that's the situation for 2012. It's as far as hurricanes or alignments for Earth, it's a very mild year. Let's put it that way.
Okay, thank you so much. Greg is in Orlando, Florida now. Greg, you're on with James McCanny. Go ahead, Greg.
Oh,
hi.
First of all, I'd like to say that I think the people of the United States of America would not go to an effect of not paying their mortgages as soon as they heard a comet's going to freaking, you know, hit the world. I think we're a little more powerful than that and respect stuff a little better than that. Besides that statement, vibrations. What kind of vibrations could distract any kind of negative energy coming towards this planet?
You mean if a comet came through or came near Earth or something?
Or a comet. You're talking about gravity, the gravity flow from the sun. It's, you know, it's
wrong. No, we're talking about electrical conditions. Gravity has very little to do with this. So we're talking about electrical conditions. And actually, electrical conditions are very important with humans. When back in about mid-90s, I was working with some scientists in Russia, and these were atmospheric scientists that wanted some electrical phenomenon explained, and we were dealing with my science, theoretical science, and their observations. And lo and behold, there were some psychologists at the university in Novosibirsk in central Russia, and they were studying, trying to get a handle on electrical conditions affecting humans. And they found out that this was one of the effects that when there were electrical alignments or various positions of the planets or new moons or full moons, that these contributed sometimes to human behavior. Or like a situation where Mercury, for example, is in retrograde, which is something that's observed in astrology. It's one of the known astrological conditions, let's put it that way. They discovered that, in fact, there were electrical effects affecting Earth and Earthlings from the planet Mercury because of these electrical connections. So we're very electrically tuned to our own planet, to the vibrations. A lot of the natives around the world talk about Gaia and the Earth and the frequencies of Earth, and that our bodies are actually tuned to those frequencies. So there's a tremendous coordination between electromagnetic effects in the solar system and the human psyche and human behavior. Sheriffs all over the world will tell you that during a new moon, the crime rate goes through the ceiling. And there's a reason for that, because people don't sleep. There are people who are a little bit on edge anyway, go off the deep end because of the full moon. It's actually a phenomenon that's real, and there's a cause and effect there.
Okay, next up, let's go to Pekin, Illinois. Hey, Jory, welcome to the program.
Hi, George. It's been a while since I talked to you.
Glad you got in.
I got a question for James. I'm a storm chaser. I've got 9 years of experience here in the central Illinois area with storm chasing and recording observations. You said that hurricanes have been, you got me convinced with what you said about the electrical windup or impulses of the earth that cause the hurricanes. And I wonder if the same thing would happen to the hurricane's kid sister, the tornado, because that's what I chase. And I've got very few photos over the 9 years. So it makes it about 1 in 3% chance that you go out and chase it, you're going to find the tornado. But do these weather events on land happen just as well with these electrical impulses?
Yes, absolutely. We can see these weather systems in a hurricane formation going over land. In my weather book, I've coined a term. I call them himicanes, just kind of a play on words, because hurricanes are over the ocean. So I said, well, himicanes are over land, but they're the same storm phenomena. And out of the arms, you see the band clouds. You see the leading edge with the tornadoes. But on the ocean, in fact, some of the biggest damage caused by a hurricane is not by the eye, but by the leading edge and the tornadoes that are out there. And what happens is that's where there's a lot of electrical discharges. When the hurricanes come in to land, that's what starts shorting out the electrical connection, and they are driving these tornadoes. It's the same situation over land. And if you look at tornadoes at night, they're very much lit up like a light bulb inside. So they have an electrical current, and that's what causes them. The electrical current comes down and touches the ground, ionizes the air, and it's that ionized air that's moving very fast up the funnel, and it causes the Coriolis force. That's what causes the rotation in the tornado and the low pressure cell at the bottom. So the tornado is literally caused by the same electrical condition that causes the hurricanes. The hurricanes are just on a bigger scale, so absolutely.
Jim, do you think science will ever catch up with hurricane predicting?
If they decide to adopt my work and recognize it, we could be there tomorrow. Hurricanes, you can see the, for example, solar storms coming in, connecting with the upper ionosphere and pulsating on our magnetic sheath, driving all the way down to the troposphere, and you can see the hurricanes reacting to this. So understanding this is decades old. What's missing is the ability of these scientists to get off their whatever and recognize that it's not warm water that causes hurricanes. The warm water concept is so absurd to imagine that warm water is somehow driving energy into this massive storm. When if you turned off the electrical conditions that drive the hurricane, that storm would dissipate in 5 minutes. You have 150 mile an hour sustained winds. What does that? This is not, it's backwards. You can't have energy driven in from a mildly warm ocean into a raging hurricane. That's backwards of the way thermodynamics works. So how do you have people lined up, thousands of PhD scientists and atmospheric scientists still claiming that warm water causes hurricanes. It's fairy tale science.
Well, it sure is. It is remarkable. So as we approach 2012, December 21st, 2012, I've thought and I've said that I think we're going to have some kind of solar event. What do you think, Jim? What's your take?
Well, the sun, we're heading up. The actual peak of the solar cycle now has moved out to about 2014. But in my bones, I think that 2012 is going to be some kind of a strange year. Before the show, I was thinking to myself, and I don't know why, I don't think Obama is going to get through this year as president. I think other things are going to happen. I think we're going to have vast social change, and I think we're going to have natural disasters, the kind the world has not seen for a long time. But I don't think it's due to the Mayan calendar, my personal opinion. It's not due to a galactic alignment or other issues. I think that we're heading into something here. And I just feel it. It's not a scientific prediction. It's not based on my knowing an orbit of something. It's just my personal feeling. So I'm with you, George, on that particular issue. I just think that the bottom's going to fall out here, and I think the vast majority of people are clueless. They have no clue of being prepared or understanding what's going on in the world around them.
Let's go to Jay in Chicago, final caller. Go ahead, Jay. Thanks.
Thanks, George and guest. I've got a question. Since you said electromagnetic forces from planet alignment do affect the human body, do you know if there's been any research done on that subject pertaining to there being, let's say, a causal nexus between that and medically impossible survivals based on the times that they've happened?
Let's take people with the lightning or electrical shocks that should have been killed. And they come out, some people just come out ticking like nothing happened, whereas other people in those conditions would be simply dead. Today I was just talking with a person that's a fan of mine, and they're working on electrical conditions to regrow human parts. Like if you cut your finger off, a chameleon or a little lizard can regrow, or a frog could regrow body parts because their electrical conditions in their body is very different. They're trying to simulate that in humans and mammals to stimulate the regrowth of fingers or things like that, or say backbones that are injured beyond repair, to have them healing because they can augment the natural electrical conditions in those regions. So there's something going, there's all kinds of research going on, but definitely the human body is electrical, and we've got a lot to learn. But I'm firmly convinced, and like I was saying with the Russian scientists, what they were doing, I'll tell you, was they were working with unborn fetuses. They had probes, and they would measure the reaction of these fetuses to various stimuli. Then when the babies were born, what they realized is that they were tuned into where the planets were. So that's the importance of the date when you were born.
Jim, you have a great and a Merry Christmas, my friend, and I shall be back in a moment with investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe as she takes us through some stories of high strangeness on Coast to Coast AM.